And you should have an outline continuing in your handout that also has this session for. We're going to call this, you know, we've talked about, you know, what do I do with God? And that is I take all that he has made of me, graciously made of me, and give it back to him and ask him to fulfill his designed purpose through me as I yield it to him, day by day by day. So let me talk about how do we treat people. And there was only one thing we could come up with, I don't care who they are, is that you love them, which means that you always act in a loving way with their best interest in mind. Always. I don't care who they are. Now we want to talk about, okay, we've got God taken care of, we got all these people, what am I going to do with me? What kind of life do I live that's pleasing to God and that's lived rightly? So we want to talk about that this session. So, what do I do with me? How do I live my life? What's the name? Let me give you a couple of verses that we'll look at. And thus, 2 Chronicles 31, 20 and 21, great verse to memorize. And it says, and thus Hezekiah did throughout all Judah. And get this, he did what was good and right and true before the Lord his God. That is not a bad testimony. That's not something that you wouldn't mind people chiseling that one on your tombstone. He did that which was good and right and true before the Lord his God. But that's not all. And in every work that he did in the service of the house of his God and in the law and in the commandments to seek his God, he did it with all of his heart and prospered. So he not only did what was good and right and true, he did it wholeheartedly. And that's how we're supposed to live. Let's look at another one. Colossians 3:23, New Testament, whatever you do, do your work heartily, just like you're working for the Lord, not for men. Whatever you do, I don't care what it is, whatever you do, there should be a sense of whole effort into that task. Let's look at another one. Proverbs 24:30-34. I memorized this verse. I didn't have the car one day, so I had to walk to work. And so I memorized these verses walking to work. And I thought about it and reflected on them, and they've been rich, rich, rich verses all, you know, for years and years. But I passed by the field of the sluggard and by the vineyard of the man lacking sense. Now, there was no sign out there in the vineyard, or no sign out there in the field that said, hey, this belongs to a sluggard. Or, hey, this man, this guy doesn't have any sense. The signs were not out there, but they were there. I passed by the field of the sluggard and by the vineyard of the man lacking sense. Behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles, and the stone wall was broken down. When I saw, and this is key, I hope you do this, when I saw, I reflected upon it. I looked and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then your poverty will come as a robber, and your want like an armed man. One of the things I was reflecting on this, I try to review my verses on a consistent basis just to keep them fresh. But as I was reviewing this, I thought, you know, it seems that the sluggard, seems the bad habits that we get into seem to be imperceptible. We don't see them, what they're doing to us. They seem to be, the consequences seem to be imperceptible. And here it is, because here's a guy, just a little sleep. It's just a little slumber. A little. And he didn't see what was happening to him. It was just, it was imperceptible to him. And I asked myself, the bad habits that I have, the things that I need to be correcting in my life, do I realize where they're taking me? Do I realize what they're doing to me? Do I look and receive instruction? And that's what we need to do. Ecclesiastes 9:10. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. The same concept of wholeheartedness. There's no activity or planning, knowledge or wisdom in Sheol where you're going. Now, verse 9, let me give you Ecclesiastes 9:9. It may be my favorite verse. You know what it says? Enjoy life with a woman whom you love all the days of your life. Can you beat that? I love that. Enjoy life with the woman whom you love all the days of your life. For there is You know, I love that one. By the way, let me encourage you to take that one to heart. You and the wife, go out and have a good time. That is biblical. You guys go out and have fun. That is biblical, you know. Anyway, doesn't have anything to do with what I'm supposed to do with me, but it's a good advice anyway, okay? Okay, so here it is. Here's summing up. You take all of you, the total package, and after losing it all to God, you then cooperate with Him in a spirit of excellence in everything that you do as He accomplishes His purposes through you. That's how we live. To shorten it a little bit, you walk in fellowship and obedience to God in a spirit of excellence. Excellence characterizes your life in everything you do. So look, I've got a quote up there. Tom Landry, they had a stadium there, and they built a statue of Tom Landry. He was the first coach of the Cowboys, was coach for about 25 years. Godly man, a very strong Christian man. But there are several comments. You can Google his name and comments or quotes by Tom Landry, and you find all this. But this is one of the things he said. And this one is stenciled on his statue outside of Cowboy Stadium. He's got a big, you know, mammoth statue, and this is the one that they chose to put on his statue at the base of his statue. That the quality of a man's life is in direct proportion to his commitment to excellence. You can believe that one. That the quality of your life is in direct proportion to your personal commitment to a standard of excellence. So the scripture, we go to number D, the scripture describes life. We talked about this as a race, but life is brief and exhorts us to live wisely in light of that brevity. James 4:14, you do not know what your life will be like. You do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. In the light of eternity, that's about all you are. In the light of eternity. But we're exhorted, even in that wisdom, to live wisely. Lord, make me to know my end. I'm short. By the way, I keep a list. You know, I told you I was kind of analytical. I'm just about half crazy, but I thought the other day, what is it that makes the humans different from all of others God's creation? So I'm making a list. You know, one of them is the fact that we're the only thing that God has ever created that knows He's going to die. We're the only ones. Horses don't know that. Dogs don't know that. Birds don't know that. Nobody knows that they're going to die except us. And God has given us the insight into knowing that the brevity of your life. So live it wisely. But we're the only one of God's creation. I came up with one the other day. We're the only one of God's creation that drinks water when He's not thirsty. Everybody walks around with their bottle of water. Okay, you go do your thing. Anyway, the only one of God's creation drinks water when they're not thirsty. But anyway, so another one here. So teach us to number our days that we may apply to thee a heart of wisdom. What else? Therefore, be careful, Ephesians 5:15-16, be careful how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of your time, for these are evil days. Make the most of your time. Be wise. What's the description of wisdom? Making the most of your time. These are not good days. We need to be wise in the midst of these bad days. And one of the things we do is to use our time wisely. So look at 1 Corinthians 9. We've quoted some of these before. Do you not know that they which run in a race all run? And Paul knew that everybody that he was writing to was aware of the games in the Colosseum. Everybody knew about that. And he used that as an illustration. Don't you know that when they all line up and run, they all run, but only one receives the prize? You know, I want you to live like the guy that receives the prize. You know what that takes? Get this next sentence. Don't mince this next sentence. Everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. And you know as well as I know, it all counts. Everything counts. Nothing is just, well, I'll just do this once. Well, I'll just eat this once. Well, I'll just skip this once. It all counts. And what he says is everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. You know, a few years back, not this past Olympics, but I think one of the U.S. girls won the U.S. Olympic gymnastics all around, the team. They won it. First time I think it had ever happened, that the U.S. team was the number one gymnastics team. So they came back, and a couple of them, they trained. They have a huge Olympic training facility there in Dallas. I think Caroli has been there. But it's a huge training facility, gymnastics. And so these girls were fairly well-known in the Dallas area, and they were on the David Letterman show, the Olympic team. So I tuned in, and I wouldn't walk across the street to see David Letterman for a week, but I wanted to see about these Olympic gals. They had done so well. And so he's asking them questions. He said, well, tell me about your life. He said, you know, this is the prime of your life. You're in high school, you know, 16, 17 years old, the prime of your life. He said, tell me about your life. So they said, well, we get up in the morning and we're down at the gym at 4 o'clock. And we work out until 7. We clean up, go to class. And we're in class till about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We get out of class and we go down to the gym and we work out 3 hours from 4 to 7. We go home, we do our homework, we have dinner, we go to bed. That's it. And he laughs. He said, you're in the prime of your life. You don't even have a life. I mean, why do you do this? And none of them are laughing. And they say, because we wanted to win the gold medal. It wasn't funny to them. Everyone who competes, and you know, one of those gals said, I haven't tasted a slice of pizza in 3 years. Everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. Another one said, I haven't tasted a soda drink in over 6 months, not even a swallow, not a drink, because it all counts. And they had one goal in mind, one thing that they wanted to accomplish, and that is to win the gold medal, and they did. Yeah, I read a story about Mary Lou Retton. You remember Mary Lou Retton? She won the Olympic gold medal all around as U.S. Olympics, all around gold medal individually in the 1984 Olympics. It was held in L.A. But Mary Lou, when she was younger, she went to a meet and placed second. And on the way home, driving along, she and her mom, and they were talking about that, and her mom says to her, talking about the fact that she placed second, and she was talking about it, and her mom finally says, she said, Mary Lou, the question is not who was the best. The question to you is, did you do your best? And Mary Lou said, you know, that changed my whole approach to training and meets. And so from that point on, I don't care if I was on the vault, the parallel bars, or what it was, the floor exercise, I thought to myself, Mary Lou, do your best. Mary Lou, do your best. Mary Lou, do your best. And she said that that changed my whole approach. I never worried about who the judges were, where the meet was being held, who the competition was. I didn't worry about that. What I did was I focused on Mary Lou, do your best. She won the gold medal. Now, her last, I saw this. I watched the Olympics, and I happened to see the night that she did this. And in the floor exercise before the final event, she hurt her ankle. And she had to tape it up heavily. And they even commented, people that were commentators, they said that wasn't sure she could compete because it was heavily taped. But it was amazing. the final deal is this vault, and you go running down this runway, and you hit this springboard, and then you hit this horse, and you do all kind of flips and turns, and then you land. And then the judges grade you on how well you did. So she goes down there, and she's lining up, and she's looking, and she's just frozen on that horse down there that she's got to go to. And she's just, you can see the look. And I mean, she's just frozen concentration. And she backs up, and then she takes off. And she goes full bore, and she, you know, hits that springboard, bounce, and hits the horse, and she does 2-3 twists, and you, boom, perfect. It's what they call, I think they what they call, she stuck it. Tens, across the board, tens. Now, she was leading the competition at that point by 0.15. So in order for her to win, she had to do enough to keep her competitor from overcoming that. So she had to make at least a 9.85 or better. She made it 10. Well, in the Olympics, so she was it. That was it. Now, you have to do it twice. You have to do the thing twice, and they take the best score. But she had a 10. It was over with. She had the gold medal. It was a done deal. But you got to do it twice. So she kind of comes running back up there, and she stops, and she has that same frozen look on her face, just total concentration. Same deal, looking at this thing, and she takes off again. Boom, boom, per 10. Again. And I thought to myself, no, wait a minute. You got it made. I mean, you could stumble and fumble and fall, and you still got the gold medal because you got a 10. But I thought to myself, you know, and I thought about this. I thought to myself, you know, she only knows one thing in life, and that is to do your best. It doesn't matter if you've already won. It doesn't matter. My focus, my purpose, my plan, the way I live is I always do my best. That ought to be us. We don't even have to think about it. We don't even have to. It doesn't matter the circumstance. It doesn't matter if we've done it before, or if this is a routine, or you always do your best. That's just the way we live. That's us as followers of the living Christ, as the disciples of Christ. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Therefore, the Apostle Paul says, back it up, Rich. Therefore, Paul says, I run in such a way as not without aim. Paul says, I know exactly where I'm going. I know exactly where I'm headed in life. I have purpose. I know exactly where I'm going. I box in such a way as not beating the air. I don't waste my strokes. I don't flail about. I don't waste my efforts. Every stroke counts. Paul says, I know exactly where I'm going, and every stroke counts. That's how he lived. There, and I buffet my body and make it my slave. I've thought about that one. Why did he bring that one in? And the only thing I could think of as I reflected on that is that I think when we begin to lose it, it shows up first in the physical. And I don't know that. I'm no psychologist. But I think in my own life that when we begin to lose it, we begin to slop off and slouch and take it easy and don't do our best, it begins to show up physically. That's where the first area was hit. I don't know that, but that's what I concluded. So how do you live that way? How do you live a life of excellence? Well, I don't have the foggiest idea, so let's call it a... Well, first of all, you have to want to. And to be honest, I've been in discipling ministry for over 50 years. I started when I was 6. but I've been in discipling, and I can tell you as a testimony, there are very few people who want to always do their best. There's very few of them. Let me tell you another story. Jimmy Carter, he ran for president, but Jimmy Carter was, he's president in 76, I think it was, but he was in the Naval Academy, and Jimmy Carter wanted to be in the nuclear Navy. Now, the nuclear Navy was just beginning. All the ships were what they call oil burners. They burned oil, and a carrier would leave out of Bremerton, Washington, or out of Coronado Island, San Diego. And the first thing that captain has on his mind is, where's my tanker? Where do I refuel? Because I'm burning oil like crazy, pushing this ship across this ocean for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles. Where's my tanker? Well, Rickover, a guy named Hyman Rickover, admiral, he knew that what we needed was nuclear-powered ships that we had to have, if we could get that, it would give us a tremendous advantage in the, what they call the Blue Navy, the Blue Water Navy, which is the ocean navy all over the world. And they wanted, so he pushed Congress to fund, let's build some nuclear-powered ships. Finally, they decided to do it. They did it in submarines, and the first big ship they did was the USS Enterprise, aircraft carrier Enterprise. Had 8 nuclear reactors aboard it. Finally, they built one. I think the ones that they built, the Nimitz class that they build today only has two reactors with the same amount of output. 2 reactors can do what 8 used to do. But Carter saw this and wanted to be in the nuclear navy. But Hyman Rickover, Admiral Rickover, every officer to be involved on a nuclear ship had to be personally interviewed and approved by him. Man, he was a stickler. He was double tough. Very high standard. But he knew that those nuclear-powered ships had to perform exceedingly well, or they'd be discarded, go back to the oil burners. And so he personally selected every officer aboard every ship. Jimmy Carter comes to him for an interview. So he comes in and he's standing here before Admiral Rickover, tough as nails. So he asks him all these questions about the academy, his grades, what he did, his extracurricular activities and how he did, and his leadership and on. And Carter had done well. And he got to the end of the interview and it was basically over with. And as Carter was about to leave, he said, "Tell me, did you always do your best?" And Carter said, "No, sir. I didn't always do my best." And he said, "Why not?" And Carter had no answer. He stood there and he had nothing to say. So he just silently did an about face and walked out of the room. "Why not?" "I don't know." He walked out of the room. Well, Rickover accepted him, and he was assigned to a nuclear sub. Sir, and after he got out of the Navy, he went back home to Georgia, and he got into politics, eventually became governor. And then he wanted to be president, but nobody knew him. So he wrote a book about his values and his history and how he was raised and his what he wanted to do and his politics, and so people would know him. You know what he titled his book? "Why Not the Best?" That's where I got the story. I bought the book. I read the book. That's where I got the story. How about you? How about you? How about me? Do you do your best? You know, there's a saying that you start where you are, take what you got, do what you can. That's just a philosophy of life. I got a job to do. Well, let me start where I am. Let me take what I got, and I'll do what I can. But let me add, do that. But you do the best you can. You start where you are. You take what you've got. And you do what you can. But you do the best you can. That's the way we live. What's the next one, Rich? Oh, let me read that to you. Humans are the only species that God has created that has the ability to alter their capacity. A human can choose to be less than he's capable of. No other creature can do that. Geese, they're going to be as big as they're designed to be and fly where they're designed to fly. Horses, that's what they're going to do. But a human being can throw it all away. A human being can decide whatever he wants to be with his life. And that's why, you know, I want you to realize that life is not over. In fact, I think I've got the statement, the last statement I make in this thing, says that today you have 100% of your life left. It's, you know, you can be who you want to be. Well, but let's just go on down through this a little more. What's the next one? Everyone who competes in the games exercise, oh, I'm not sure, go ahead with the next one. Tom Lander again, as a coach, my job is to get men to do what they don't want to do so that they can be who they want to be. That's your job. At a table leader, you know, that's your job. I sit around with a group of table leaders and I can say, "Well, we're required to memorize 5. That ought to be good enough." And what do you think? "Well, that ought to be okay, right?" No, that's not okay. We're going to do more than that. You know why we're going to do more than? Because I know that you can be more than you think. I will not allow you to be less than you can be. Let's get with the program. But Tomlin says, my job is to get men to do what they don't want to do so that they can be who they really want to be. Okay, the next one, Rich. So how do you, why do you act the way you act? Why do you make the decisions that you make? Let me show you something. I developed this thing years ago. I was teaching a Bible study, and I think the Bible said it was in Thessalonians, and I've gone back and looked at Thessalonians, and I cannot find out where I came up with this. It's not there, but I did. And I was trying to communicate a concept to some students, but I wrote down in here, let's draw a triangle, but really this is an iceberg. And most of an iceberg is below water. You can't see it. And so I kind of draw a little wave across here because you can just see the tip of an iceberg. You can't see the whole thing. But the most of the iceberg is below water. You can't see it. But what people do see is what you do, how you act, how you react, what you say. They can see that. But where does it come from? Where do your actions come from? Why do you act that way? So, Rich, what's the next one? It comes from the way you think. That's why we try to get people in the Word. We try to get people to live biblically because it changes how they think, which changes how they act. What's the next one, Rich? Oh, for as he thinks within himself, so is he. Proverbs 23:7. I think we may have another one. Romans 12:2. And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by changing the way you think. It will. If you'll change the way you think, you'll change who you are. The transformation takes place as you transform the way you think. What's the next one? Howie Hendricks made this comment, professor at Dallas Theological Seminary. He said one time, your thinking is crucial because if you are not thinking correctly, you are not living correctly. So where does your thinking come from? Your thinking, and this is really critical, your thinking comes from your value system. What you value. What you value determines how you think, which determines how you act. I read an article once, this is several years, I think it was in Time magazine. I'm sure it was. It was an intriguing article to me, so I read it, but it was, what is the interplay with the mind and the will? How do they relate? Your mind and your will. And so this rather exhaustive study that they had done and was recorded in the medical section of Time magazine talked about the interplay of the mind, and what it basically concluded was, the study did, that what the mind does is that it assesses through the senses the things that are happening, takes and consolidates this, all these things that are happening, and makes suggestions to the will as to a course of action. So the mind says, hey, you read this, and why don't you sign up and go to that conference Saturday morning? Hey, you read this, and it sounds like this is pretty good. Why don't you take this Equip Disciple class? Or it says, you know, hey, why don't you do this? And throughout the day, hundreds of times throughout the day, your mind assesses information, puts it together, makes a suggestion to the will. Why don't you do this? How about this? How about this? And now here's the key that the article said, the only criteria by which the will says yay or nay, the only criteria is the question, is it pleasurable? And the article went on to say that you will always do what your value system says is pleasurable. Always. You never violate that. You may not even know what your values are, but you never violate them. Is it pleasurable? Now, let me give you an illustration. Let's say that you were in college at one time. You know what that's all about. So you're in college and you're taking organic chemistry. I took organic. Boy, it was a bear. But so you're taking you got a major quiz the next day. So you're studying. You're in your room. You're studying. You got your over by in the corner. You got the lights on, and you got these formulas that you're working. And this reaction does this. And you're studying. And you're trying to memorize this stuff. And your buddies come by. Then they knock on your door. Says, "Hey, let's take a break. We're gonna run down and grab a pizza, Coke, a little recharge the batteries. Be back in 45 minutes. Let's go." So what you gonna do? You always do that which is most pleasurable, right? But, if you think to yourself, you know, I need this course. This is in my major. And if I go into that classroom in the morning, sleepy, a little bit dreary-eyed, not quite as well prepared, a little bit confused, I'm not going to do so well. And I need this course. And you know what you will decide? You guys go ahead. I need to study. You know why you made that decision? Because the most pleasurable thing, according to your value system, is to stay there and study that organic and make a better grade. That was the most pleasurable thing to do, and you do that with every situation that comes up. Everything that the mind says to your will, that's how you decide. Which brings into question, what do you value? What is it? What in your life that you really like? You value that. And I can tell you that there's some people that I see and that I meet and work with that one of their highest values is hanging out. Let's just go hang out. And they go, I just go, you got to be kidding me. Night after night, hour after hour, you're going nowhere, but it's so much fun. Yeah. But what your value system is saying to you, you'd rather do that than you had become the person that you could be. And that's right. That's what I value the most. And that's exactly what they do, decision after decision after decision. So, you always decide in the direction of what is valuable to you. But here's another thing. All permanent change takes place in your life by the altering of your value system. If you want to make a change, I'm going to turn over a new leaf. I got a New Year's resolution. It's all vain. Unless you change what you value. And I've decided that this year, I'm going to memorize a verse every day. Because I realized I failed to share Christ with this guy because I didn't know the verse and I lost this guy. That is not going to happen. You know what changed? Your value changed, which will change the way you think, which will change the way you act. All permanent change takes place by the altering of your value system. That is a fact. So what do you value? Let me ask you now, where do your values come from? It comes from what you consider truth. Now, truth is not necessarily Bible. Truth is what you believe is going to make you a winner in life. Truth is what's going to bring you success. Truth is what's going to make you a winner. Truth is what's going to make you happy. It may be going after money. It may be being a part of this gang or associating with these people, but whatever you consider the thing that's going to make you successful is what you consider your truth system, which forms your values, which forms the way you think and how you act. So what's your truth system? What is it that's going to make you the person that you want to be? What's going to do that? What can you rely on? What will not fail you? So that's how do you alter your value system? What's the next one? Number one, I think, and this is just, now, let me just tell you that I'm no... I didn't read this stuff in a book. This has just come from working with people and reading the Bible and praying and asking God to teach me. And this is just stuff. So these are things that I've come up with, okay? So, it's worthy of your consideration. But I think the first thing that you need to do to alter your value system is stop and think. Where am I? Where am I going? How am I doing? Am I getting there? What am I banking on? Is it working? You need to stop and think. Look at this verse. The book of Haggai, great, great book. Chapter 1, verses 5 and 7 and verse 9. Therefore, thus says the Lord, consider your ways. Is that not what we're talking about? Now, thus says the Lord, consider your ways. You have sown much, but you harvest little. Do you see that? You eat, but there's not enough to be satisfied. You drink, there's not enough to become drunk. You put on clothes, no one is warm. And get this, he who earns wages to put into a purse with holes. You ever feel like that? Where is my money going? It just evaporates. And God says, does that not make you want to think? Where's your money going? You can't seem to account for it. What's happening? Don't you want to think through on that? That's what God says. You look for much, and behold, it came to little. And when you brought it home, I blew it away. Why, says the Lord of hosts? Because of my house, which lies desolate, while each of you runs to his own house. They had come back from captivity to rebuild the temple. But instead of rebuilding the temple, they went off and started their own deal. I'm building my house, getting my farm up to date. I'm upgrading my livestock. I'm doing my thing. Fooey on the temple. And God says, you think I'm going to bless that? You think I'm going to let you get away with that? Uh-uh, ain't going to happen. So what Haggai says, are you considering? Look at yourself. Look at what's happening to you. Look at your state. Are you not, does that not ring a bell? Isn't that not screaming at you? So the first thing I think we need to do is stop and think. Now, I spend Sunday afternoon, it's a good time for me, but I have my goals for the year, and then I have my goals for the week. And I go down to my office, I got a little office down in one of the bedrooms, and I go down there, and I sit down, and I get my goals out, and I think. And I get my Bible out, and I think, Chuck, how's it going? How was the week go? Did you live purposefully last week? And I reflect, and I think. Oftentimes, when I come home at night, a lot of times I'll be at a Bible study or something, and I'll come home, it'll be 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. And we live in a neighborhood that's kind of if you go through our neighborhood, you wind up in the lake. So, you can't go through our neighborhood. And so we don't have much traffic. You kind of take this side road, and you go down there ways, and all of a sudden, you've got this little neighborhood, and that's it. And so we don't have much traffic. So I'll get home at night, many, many nights. Many nights I do this. And I pull into the driveway and get out of my pickup, and I just go for a walk. It may be 9 or 10 o'clock. And I'll think. I'll walk down that road by myself late at night, and I'm thinking about the day, and what did we do, and how did it go, and what do I need to be doing? And I just reflect on the day and reflect on life and reflect, what should I be doing? How do I live my life? And I reflect. And I don't find people doing that much. In fact, I think our society dictates against that. It's activity after. Sometimes our churches dictate against that. Man, if you did everything the church offered, you wouldn't be home. You couldn't go home. There's just so much going on. I don't have time to think. We need to think. Stop and reflect. Who has God made me to be? How would he have me live? Am I doing that? Where am I messing up? What do I need to change? What should I alter? What am I doing right? And you need to stop and think. What's the next one? Re-examine your truth system. Is what I'm counting on to make me a successful life, is it working? Let me look back. Is it working? Am I really believing in that which is going to take me to the end of my life successfully? You re-examine your truth system. Then here's one other thing. I ask yourself four questions. What's the first one? Who do you want to be? Number two, what education, what training, what experiences do I need to become that person? Number three, when, where, and through whom am I going to get it? And number four, what price am I willing to pay for it? I was speaking to a group, they were from Oklahoma, and a guy came up to me, and he said, Chuck, do you remember sharing those four questions with us, a number of years ago? It had been 15 or 20 years. He said, you shared that with me 20 years ago. He said, do you remember that? And I told him, I said, well, John, I remember being at the meeting, but I can hardly remember what I said yesterday, let alone 20 years ago. And he said, he went down through that. He said, this is what you shared with us 20 years ago. He said, Chuck, that changed my life. And I said, what do you mean, John? He said, well, you showed that. He said, so I was a captain in the Air Force. I was flying C-130s out of Tinker Air Force Base, Oklahoma City. But I asked myself, who is it that I want to be before God? I decided that I felt like God had gifted me and called me. I wanted to be a Christian businessman that had a ministry to people, couples, and people in our church and in our community. That's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be equipped and trained to be able to do that. So he said, so I look around, what training and what help do I need to be that? And I found there was a... So I thought, I need to get with somebody who's doing it. And so I thought about some people, and he said, you know, number three, I thought, you know, there's a guy here in town that's doing that. He's in real estate, and he's doing that. He's having a tremendous ministry in people's lives. So I went to see him, and I asked him, I said, would you train me to do what you're able to do? And John, what John eventually did, he got out of the Air Force, he went to work for that guy. And he has had a phenomenal, godly ministry working with couples and men, and he and his wife both, John and his wife, Sally, they have had a tremendous ministry. And he told me, he said, Chuck, when you shared that, I thought to myself, I have got to think through on where I'm going with my life. I did that. And he said, that changed my life. And I told him, John, I said, I didn't change your life. The thing that changed your life is you reflected on it and were obedient to what you heard, to what you developed. That's what changed. You were obedient. You reflected and you were obedient. So, four questions you can ask yourself. What's the next one, Rich? Well, go ahead. In our accountability group, we set SMART goals. Well, you know all this. Specific, measurable action, or reasonable, timely. We set goals. Okay, what's the next one? Oh, by the way, only 3% of people have written goals. Can I encourage you, leave the 97? Because they're going to work, they work for the 3. Leave the 97, but become people who set written goals. And maybe in those 5 areas, my walk with God, my family, my health, my business, my personal development. But also, we use OATS in our ministry. Go ahead, Rich. What is the objective? What activities will accomplish that objective? When am I going to do it? And then when am I going to evaluate how I'm coming? Which I do every Sunday afternoon. We use that. OATS. Everybody knows about that. But we use that. Okay, what's the next one? I get help from others. Now, here's the deal. The mind that brought you to where you are can't take you to where you ought to be. You're going to have to get some help. You can't just suddenly say, well, I'm going to be different. The mind that brought you to where you are today can't be the same mind to take you where you ought to be. So get help. What's the next one, Rich? Each of us needs all of us, and all of us need each of us. That's the fellowship of the body. We need each other. We need to be helping each other. Next one. Paul, all of us, Timothy, you need a Timothy. I understand that. Somebody that I'm working with. I need a Paul, somebody that's working with me. But you know who else I need? I need a buddy. I need a buddy. So I need Paul, Timothy. I need somebody that I'm building into their life. I need somebody that's watching for my soul. But I need a buddy. Somebody that we need all of those. Okay? Accountability group. Here's one that I would ask you to seriously consider. You need to who do you hang out with? You need to evaluate that very carefully. Who do you listen to? You need to check that one. What's the next one? Back up a little bit. Yeah, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. 1 Corinthians 15. That's true for your kids too. Be very careful of who your kids are running around with. Proverbs 14. Leave the presence of a fool or you will not discern words of knowledge. Next one. Face reality. I read a book, one of the best books I've ever read, called From Good to Great. You guys read that? Jim Collins. What a great book. I read it twice. That's one of the books that I want to try to read maybe every year or two. It's Good to Great by Jim Collins. In the book, he tells a story of the Stockdale Paradox. Now, Admiral Stockdale was the senior officer in the Hanoi Hilton POW camp during the Vietnam War. And they were tortured relentlessly, viciously, ugly. He was a senior officer. They called it the Hanoi Hilton. It was a pit. And they were beaten and tortured and they suffered and it was horrendous. So Jim Collins, who wrote the book, goes out to interview Admiral Stockdale. He was down at Stanford here working out on some things. So he goes out to interview him, and they're walking along the Stanford campus, and he asks him, he said, how'd you guys make it? How did you endure that for 7 years? How'd you go through that? And he said, well, there's two things. He said, number one is we never lost hope. And that's us. Well, there is no cause for us to ever lose hope. God loves us. He has a perfect plan for our life. He is working in our life. We will not give up hope. I don't care how the bottom is falling out, how the circumstances are turning against me. I will not give up hope because I have a God who is omnipotent, omniscient. He loves me, and he's committed to me. I will not give up hope. That's the first thing. But he said, you know, the next thing is you got to get through the day. You're being beaten and tortured and just excoriated with belts and whips and clubs, and you got to get through the day. And so he said, there's kind of a paradox. I'm going to be delivered. I got hope. But what about today? And what we've got to do, we've got to be men and women who live today. How do I react today? What is the godly thing to do today? How do I love people today? How do I react to circumstances today that are horrendous, unjust, they're not fair, they're not true? And how do I react? I got to get through the day. I know that God has my best interest. I know that he loves me. I know that he has a purpose in my life. I'm depending on him. My hope is in him. But God, help me get through the day. And we've got to live that paradox. They call it the Stockdale paradox. Living with hope, but doing what you need to do to get through the torture of the day. What's the next one? Oh, if you could. Let me talk about this. See, if you could, back up one. If you could, let me ask you. If you could have a quiet time every morning, 15 minutes, read one chapter. Could you do that? Could you get up in the morning, maybe another 15 minutes early, pray your prayer, God, open my eyes, and then open your scripture and read at least one chapter, and then jot down some notes as to what he meant. Could you do that? Okay, here's the next question. Should you? Would that be healthy? Would that enhance your walk with God? Would that enhance the quality of your life? Would that train your mind? Would that change how you think? Then you think, well, yeah, I could do that. Yeah, I can get up another 15 minutes early. May have to go to bed 15 minutes early. Oh, I can do that, yeah. But should you? And you say, well, wouldn't hurt to start each day off spending 20 minutes with the Lord or reading his word and praying. Yeah, I should do that. Third question, will you? I can give you the formula for success, give it to you in three words. I could, I should, and I will. That is the formula for success. You know the formula for disaster? Give it to you in three words. I could, I should, I don't. What are you going to do with you? What's your life like? What are you going to do with your life? If you could, memorize a verse a week. If you could, write it out on a card and put it on your bathroom mirror, take it with you on your truck when you get a stop at a red light, whip it out and work. If you could, memorize a verse every week. Should you? If you could, go down to the nursing home and visit the sick once a week. Go down there for an hour Wednesday afternoon. If you could, should you do that? And gang, you just have to think through that if you could and if you should, will you? I'm trying to think as we walk and live before God that we are the man that we ought to be. And you know, I heard a little ditty one time. It said, I'm not the man I ought to be. I'm not even the man I could be. But thank God I'm not the man I used to be. And that's where we're headed. We're not perfect. But if I could, I'm going to live right. If I could, I'm going to do the right things. If I could, I'm going to love my neighbor as myself. If I could, I'm going to submit all that I have to God and ask him to live through me. Now, that's the mind of a disciple. Wholly submitted to God. Everything is surrendered. Loves his neighbor as himself. And lives a life of excellence in all things. That's the way I am. That's the way I think. That's what rolls around up there in this brain housing group up there. That's what rolls around. That's the mind of the disciple. And then we can talk about how to lead a table, how to help somebody start memorizing scripture, how to help somebody have a quiet. We can learn those tools. We can learn those methods. But what's in your mind? That's what counts. So, thanks for letting me come out. Yeah.